And he joins me now, talking about the world without you. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good. Good to be here. Yay.
I'm excited to have you. Okay, so I want to start with this. I want to talk about the world without you. But you hold a pretty unique distinction in my life. You caused me, and this is a true story, you caused me to openly weep on an airplane. This is a true story. Okay, so I was on my way to LA, and this was earlier this year, or may have been late last year, one of the two. And, you know, they had the films on the plane. I was on a United flight. They were playing On the Basis of Sex. And you had a pivotal role, obviously, in the movie. It's where I recognized you from. And there's a scene in the final scene where she's arguing in front of the court, the three judges, where she looks back at you for a moment, and you have this look in your face. Because your character obviously was a caretaker for his mother who was ill and what have you, and you communicated all this stuff with your face, and then I just start openly weeping because I started thinking about everything that your character had gone through. I started thinking about when I had to take care of my grandmother who had Parkinson's disease, and that look that you gave, this look of hope but despair at the same time, this look of sorrow but relief of what the situation you're going through. It was, you didn't say a word, but I started openly weeping, so I wanted to share that with you.
Oh man, thanks so much. Yeah, it's all in the eyes, you know. But you know they'll what was it, I did a movie with Tony Scott, Ridley Scott's brother, may he rest in peace. We did The Fan, me and Robert De Niro and Wesley Snipes, and he said, and Tony Scott said, if you feel it, or if you think it, they'll see it. So if you think it, they'll see it. So, you know, that was a...
Well, it definitely came through on my end. It definitely came through on my end. I love that movie. Did you enjoy making that one?
I really, really did. You know, Armie Hammer's great, and Kathy Bates, and of course, Felicity Jones is just a wonderful actress. And I was really happy to be in that company of actors. I was really fortunate to... a lot of times to be in great company as actors, Twin Peaks, you know, and, you know, way back to Rambo, First Blood, and bringing it around, you know, the world without you, it's a great company of actors, you know, PJ Byrne and Annika Marx and myself. And, I mean, it's like, it was so great. And, you know, it wasn't a comfortable movie to make, but it was cool.
Well, yeah. Tell the people about exactly what it is. What is The World Without You all about?
Well, In the conflict in Iraq, they executed a journalist, the Islamic terrorist, and they put it up on YouTube. Well, this is a story about what happened, the repercussion of that, what happens when his family has to witness that. And then a year later, the movie starts, and and it's the memorial for the year, 1 year after he died. You know, when someone dies, a lot of times you memorialize him. He was this great guy. He played I played his father. I was the son. His son was a journalist and a passionate guy. And so my three other daughters, who are all a complete handful, and then their husbands, and everybody shows up at the house for this thing. And it's not comfortable. I mean, a lot of times, a family get togethers. I don't know about your family, but there's a lot of energy in the Mulkey family. So, you know, it's not always comfortable, but it's not as fraught as our movie. But so they hash out, everybody brings out their lists of, hey, I wanted to talk to you about this. And they're also their remembrances of the passing of their brother and how they felt about it. So it's a really passionate, personal movie, and I followed the story. And so when I was given a chance to play the father in The World Without You, I jumped at it. It was great. They offered it to me, so yeah, great.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like one of those stories that needs to be told, and I guess my question would be, is it hard when you go into something like that that's such a deep subject matter, even somewhat on the basis of sex? This one seems to be even a little bit more than that. So there's such a deep subject matter that you know, can mess with you mentally, I would think, right? Do you ever find yourself taking some of your work home, taking those character emotions home with you? Or are you able to leave them on set?
No, you carry it around. It's like this little bag that, you know, and you think, I left it on set, and then you'll be at, you're like, you know, get in your hotel room, you sit down and you go, and boing, it pops right up, you know, and it does it for the length of the movie. This one was definitely that, and it was not a comfortable movie to make. If you go, who was the funniest one on set, and who was the most, you know, there wasn't a lot of that, you know. It was, but I was actually the funniest one on set.
Oh, naturally.
Now, me and PJ Burns, he's great. He's funny too. But yeah, there's a gravity that sticks with you on anything. When I did On the Basis of Sex, it was like that, you know. And doing Captain Phillips when we were with Tom Hanks, you know, with Molly Pirates and all that stuff, there was, you know, the gravity. Of course, we were at sea for 2 months, so, you know, it's like, that'll keep you in the bag for sure. But yeah, it's never really a walk away. I'm done, you know. It's not like you're going to put together skateboards, you know. You got those trucks on. Okay, let's go have a beer. It's not really that way. No.
Yeah, I can only imagine. That's one of the things I've always appreciated about the actor, is that just wanted to know how you can just separate yourself. Because I feel like you always have the, it's almost like when, after you're finished playing a character, it's like that almost like a friend that you've known for a very long time, and you sit and reminisce about them ever so often or what have you. So it's an interesting dichotomy that actors have to go through at times.
It's amazing.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, there we go.
Here we go. I'm just gonna do this. I'm gonna plug me in. I'm ready, you know. I'm 21st century. You have to link it first, you know.
Then yeah, that's one of the keys there. Okay. Can you hear me all right?
Oh, let me see. Now I got you. I got you.
Yeah. We're good?
You're frozen on the screen, though, but that's okay.
Can hear me?
I can, yeah. I'll just rock on. Yeah, that's
okay.
Great.
I'm not sure why it's frozen, but we'll continue on. We talked about it, but the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, Chris, is I'm a massive admirer and lover of all things 1980s cinema. And I actually published my first book earlier this year called Back from the Future, all about the Back to the Future franchise. And you are in two of, and you mentioned one already, but two of my favorite 80s films of all time. First, you talked about First Blood, and then you're in 48 Hours as well. You worked on 48 Hours. Talk to me, though. These were really the two vehicles that launched the careers of Sylvester Stallone. I mean, Rocky, obviously, but Rocky and First Blood kind of together. And then when you talk about Eddie Murphy, 48 Hours is what did it for him. What was it like working with those two guys? And did you know that they were going to be the mega stars of the decade that they were?
excuse me. I thought Stallone was just an amazing guy. And I was really happy that I was cast in First Blood, because I was a huge Rocky fan. And we didn't know that that movie was going to become a figure of speech. Hey, don't go Rambo on me, okay? At the weight pen down in Venice, they everybody calls me Rambo. All the brothers said, hey, what's up, Rambo? And it's a great place. I played 2,000 games of basketball for the show. Hello to all the homies in Venice at the basketball courts. But but really going into First Blood, you know, Brian Dennehy, may he rest in peace, and me and David Caruso, we were just kind of all there doing it, you know, and Richard Crenna, we're kind of just doing it. And then 48 Hours, that was Eddie Murphy's first movie, and it was just great to work with, and Nick Nolte, and, you know, I was in it for a minute, you know, it was great. So, you know, it was really fun to be as kind of how that, yeah, I was being in movies that kind of jumped up like that and stuck around, you know. It's nice.
Yeah, especially, you know, I mean, both of them, but First Blood, I mean, we just had the last of the Rambo series that came out this last year, Last Blood, appropriately titled Last Blood. But, I mean, to be a part of something like that, let me ask you this, though. When you're filming it, you said, yeah, you're a Rocky fan, you're excited to work with him. Did you know, though, like when you saw the movie, did you know that's how it was going to turn out? Meaning when you were making it, did it feel like it was going to look like it did on screen, if I'm making sense? Did you know it was going to be like this great movie that people are going to gravitate to?
we really didn't. You know, Brian Dennehy, we were down by the river, and the helicopter's up above, and Rambo's in the tree, and, you know, and it's cold, and it's a, you know, it's winter time. It was kind of like snowing, but it wasn't snowing in this Fraser River Canyon. And Brian Dennehy turned to me. He said, "Mulkey, if this movie makes a nickel, I'll eat my hat." And I went, "Really? Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see." And then Ted Koch says, "Hey, you guys, get ready. Here we go." And the helicopter flies over us. And I looked up and I go, and then the helicopter, it made a lot of money. It did make a lot of money.
It did.
So
it did.
And he never ate his hat. Okay. So, Brian, come on.
Come on, man. Come on, man.
Come on, man. But, you know, but also in that same scene, the helicopter was flying over us, and then it descended into the Fraser River Canyon. So it was stone on either side, right? And you could just fit a helicopter right in there, just above the river beneath the thing. And I'm going, "I'll go out. Here we go. This is like Vic Morrow." Vic Morrow got killed in a helicopter accident. I turned to Brian and I went, "Okay, here we go, Vic Morrow, you know." But nothing happened, so it was great.
Man, that's crazy to me that you got to, you know, experience that and then see what it obviously became. It made more than a nickel. I mean, not much more, but it made at least a little bit more than a nickel, right? Yeah,
it's made a truckload of dough.
It set
Carelco up. It made a lot of dough.
Yeah, yeah, it made a couple ducats.
It's still around. It's like amazing. It's like, I don't know, but Richard Crenna was great. You want another story from Rambo First Blood? I'll give you one if you want.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so this may be disputed, but it's really true. So I fly up to Vancouver, and I knew Brian Dennehy, played the sheriff in the movie, because we shot a movie called Rumor of War down in Mexico. And there's a whole story about the bar fight down there and stuff, and, you know, and our involvement in that. But that'll be another story, probably not on the air. But anyhow, so I fly up there, and Brian's going, "Hey, Mulkey, okay, here we go." I go, "Here we go again, Brian. No problems now." He said, "No, it would be okay, except, did you see Kirk Douglas?" I said, "Kirk Douglas?" He said, "Yeah, the same van that brought you from the airport in Vancouver about 2 hours ago went there with Kirk Douglas in the thing. He was going to play the colonel, and he got angry at Stallone for the rewrite because Sly rewrote the script and really focused the character on Rambo rather than the colonel. And he did a great job. And so Kurt Douglas got angry at him, and they got an argument, and Kurt Douglas threw the script at Stallone. "Go something yourself," I think was the correct. I don't know what the other word was. So "go something yourself." And so he left. He quit the movie. So I'm going, "Oh no, now one of the major movie stars is supposed to be in the movie is not doing it." So they called Richard Crenna, and Richard Crenna came on and played Colonel Troutman in 4 movies, and is just a great guy to work with.
Wow. Kirk Douglas in that role, I mean, it's a whole different movie, right? It's a
whole different
film.
Movie, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my good, I never heard that before. Well, rest in peace to the legend, Kirk Douglas, of course. What I wanted to ask you, so I mentioned I had this book come out earlier, and the one thing I wasn't ready for was the reviews on Amazon. And some of them were great. But we know we live in a society of either the greatest thing that you've ever seen or read, or it's a waste of paper, which is what someone's words were on the Amazon review. So I wasn't ready for that. Not that I couldn't handle it. I just wasn't ready for that kind of review. I had never done anything as an individual that got that kind of criticism. For you, being an actor, obviously these films that you're in, either even though they're ensemble pieces, you still have this individual contribution to them. When a movie gets that negative review, how does it make you feel?
One, I don't really ever read reviews. I never read reviews.
You're a smart man.
Because here's the deal, okay? Because the good ones, you're going to believe, and the bad ones, you're going to believe. So forget about it. No. You know, talk to me about how much money it made. Talk to me about whether you go do another movie with those people, you know? Talk to me about that. Yeah. I mean, I got so many. I mean, we're talking about you know, Rambo First Blood, we're talking about 48 hours, we're talking about, you know, the world without you. No, it's how it affected people. When World Without You was released 2 days ago, I sent a psh out there, and I got such great feedback from people. And I think it's because of this COVID thing that people are at home and they're taking time to really slow down and really watch stuff and really consider stuff and just, you know, kind of knock the corners off their life. And people were going, oh my God, it's just, I woke up this morning, I'm still thinking about this movie, you know? It's really an amazing thing. I thought that Annika Marx is fantastic in the movie. And Susan Johnson, who played my wife, is, you know, the mother who's trying to get it, keep everything just okay. And I'm me. I'm just doing my thing. So.
I think that you hit on something there. It's just, you know, you're never as good as they say you are, and you're never as bad as they say you are, right? Yeah. And that's just kind of how you have to live with it. What has it been like, though? Because I know that you're returning to – you're a working actor, obviously, and you're returning to work here very soon. What has it been like having to go to set during the pandemic?
Well, let me see. We started this project for Amazon called on Amazon Prime called The Power, like that I was talking about from the novel, The Power. And we started doing it I flew over to London, and we did pre-production last week in January, first week in February. I flew back home. They started shooting the first part of it in the UK. And then they were going to shoot my part like a couple months later. COVID shut it all down. So then nobody worked. I mean, all my music, because I'm a musician too, and like all the music gigs and everything, you know, dried up. And so then I got a job doing a TV series called Mud on Your Tires, believe it or not, in Belgrade, Serbia, a romantic comedy. I played this guy from Louisiana who's a musician and falls in love with this Serbian woman and goes over there. And I had a great time. It was great. So, and in Serbia, people wore masks and observed the protocol. Were very cool and very nice, but it wasn't so extreme. I didn't go through any quarantine like I'm going to go through Friday. I'll start in Cape Town. I do a week in my hotel room. So it's, you know, solitary confinement.
Essentially.
I'll be watching a lot of sports.
You will, which is a great segue. Again, but check out The World Without You. Definitely go check it out wherever you can stream it or watch it, or rent it, buy it. Do what you have to do to support the film. But you bring up sports. You were telling me right before. Do you want to throw that hat on again? Your hat that you had?
Yeah, St. Paul Saints.
The St. Paul Saints, yeah, of course, with Mr. Murray. What is your involvement? Are you just a fan, or you have involvement in the franchise?
Well, you know, I'm a friend of Bill and Brian Doyle Murray and, you know, Joel and all the Murray brothers. And I do their Caddyshack golf tournament down in St. Augustine every year. And I play music down there. But the Saints is the Northern League, you know, a minor league team. And it's just a beautiful stadium they've built right on the Mississippi River. And I go over the time. My mom used to go all the time, you know. And my family always goes there, and it's just it's the most idyllic baseball kind of venue you can go to, because it's so easy to go there. You know, when the umpire needs more balls, they put a knapsack on the back of a little piglet and they send the pig out onto the field, because it's you know, it's the Murray brothers. It's, you know, there's a nun there that's giving massages. You can get a haircut. You can drink. And then you can drink, and then you can actually drink there too, and it's great. So I've been, you know, St. Paul Saints fan for a long time.
Is that your sport? Is baseball your favorite of the team sports?
Football.
Oh, you're a football guy.
Yeah,
okay.
Football. Yeah, I mean, I love baseball, and I got to pitch. I worked with Ron Sheldon on the run up to Bull Durham, and so I was. I got to pitch four innings against the Bakersfield White Sox back in the day in a movie that we did called Player to Be Named Later. So, yeah, so I was a pitcher. I pitched, yeah, through.
Okay.
I mean, I like it, but, you know.
And then how has it been, though, as a spectator? I think this is all that we've talked about, really, it seems like, over on our side of things since March or whenever the world shut down. How has it been for you as a spectator and a lover of sports? Did you enjoy the NBA bubble basketball? Was the World Series weird to watch without really many people? Like, what was your feedback on all this stuff?
It's all weird. You know, it's a weird, you know, I follow the basketball and yes, Lakers, bang. And so I know.
They had to. So I'm a Houston sports fan, right? So I know that the Astros aren't the most beloved franchise in the world, but I was hoping for my Rockets this time around. And now we've lost everything. We've lost D'Antoni, Daryl Morey, but continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's the beard. Yeah. No, I thought that they had a shot, but we were loaded. But anyhow, it was basketball was weird, you know, because there's no sports. Fans there, and then baseball, the World Series was weird, but the Dodgers won, so we got two, but we're not going to get football. That's not going to happen. Oh my God, I could go on about that. And it's weird to watch the football games too, because the players are different, the atmosphere is different, so it's been weird. Also, I follow UFC big time, and so to see guys fighting in like a studio with like 60 people. It's like, what? The world title, you know, 60 people, you know.
But haven't you found, though, that it's interesting that you say that you're a big UFC fan, because that's one of my sports that I probably watch more than anything. And yeah, found that the fans didn't affect my enjoyment as much. If anything, I could hear the punches more. I felt like I was more involved with the action. I wasn't distracted by the crowd noise.
No, you're right. It is. And sometimes the fans react to something that really didn't even happen, you know? But yeah, I see your point. Yeah. I watch it anyhow. So I'm not giving up. I'm in there for it all. I love it. So I have to be, you know, I take my guitar and I turn off the sound, and I just, I know when a sporting event, I can follow the game without the guys telling me what's going on. You know?
Right.
So it's like, sometimes most commentators now are really good. A couple of years ago, some commentators talk about themselves, or they'll talk about the money deals that are going on instead of the actual play that's going on. That kind of bugs me, but aside from that, it's cool. But it's weird. It's weird. It's going to be in the college football. I don't know. I don't understand that at all. I just, yikes.
Yeah, so. I think that might be a bridge too far there. But with the UFC, I just want to ask, do you have any particular fighters that you like to watch? Is there somebody that you're a particular fan of, or are you just a fan of the sport overall?
Well, you know, I knew some of the guys back in the day, you know, some of the old school guys. But yeah. And, you know, there's the freaks like, you know, remember Brock Lesnar, you know, and
of course,
and De Silva and all those guys. So it's like, you know, I follow boxing too. There was a great fight last night on ESPN too. I'm who the heck was that?
There was a great one this weekend too, with Leo Santa Cruz and Gervonta Tank Davis. It was a really, really great fight in the Alamo Dome.
Yeah, Santa Cruz won, right?
He got knocked out. He got knocked out by Tank Davis. Yeah.
Oh, he really got caught. Oh, he got caught. Yeah.
He got caught in the sixth round.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, midway. That's always the, you know, the sixth or seventh round is always like, you know, it's amazing. I used to go, my buddy Tim Busfield and I used to go to boxing all the time, because I did Golden Gloves when I was a kid and stuff. And just followed. My dad was a fighter. So, I go downtown to the Olympic Auditorium and watch boxing all the time. You know, it's the Thursday night fights downtown Los Angeles. Now it's a Korean Christian church, which is it's another way to go with that building, but you know,
but a little bit of a departure from its origins, right?
Yes. So anyhow, a quick story. So Tim and I are it's a prelim, and it's very quiet. And what's great about the Olympic Auditorium, it was where they shot the Rocky fights, and it was built in the 30s, and it's the ring is in the middle, and all the seats around are just all focused right on the ring. And so there's a couple middleweights fighting, and they're really just dancing. They're just dancing. Nobody's really, everybody's like throwing punches, and they're all like this far away. And, you know, and I'm going, and the crowd's quiet. And I'm going, Tim, I'm going to get this thing going. And he goes, what? I said, because it was this is the second, the first start of the second round, everyone's quiet. The first round, nobody even got hit. And I yell, go to work. Go to work. And really, but I'm really loud, you know, because the actor really, I get off first, be first, be first. And so another guy over here is yelling, yeah. By the end of the second round, okay, these guys are toe-to-toe in the middle of the thing. The crowd is going completely crazy, and they're just blasting each other. It's just amazing. You think it was like, you know, Ali versus Foreman or something. Oh, my God. It was
go
so
to work.
Fun.
Go to work. Yeah, I like that.
Get off first. Be first. Be first.
You always see the dynamic characters at a boxing fight. Some of my favorite memories are the last several years. The last thing that I did before quarantine happened, I was at the MGM Grand there in Las Vegas, Nevada, see the heavyweight championship fight between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. Wow. And the electricity in that building was crazy. You know, I felt like all of Europe was at the MGM Grand Garden Arena cheering for Tyson Fury. And the result of that fight was shocking to a lot of people, what happened to Wilder. But I just miss, that's what I miss. I miss being in the crowd. I can watch it on TV without the crowd. I miss being there, though.
Being there at a live boxing match is great. You know, I saw Tommy Hearns. I've seen Sugar Ray. I've seen Muhammad Ali. I've seen a lot of guys live. And so the crowd's the deal. And, you know, you can watch it on TV all you want, but unless you're sitting close enough to get like blood on your T-shirt, you know, it's not close enough.
What was it like, real quick, last boxing question for you, but what was it like to see Ali live? Because my father went and saw him in the Astrodome. I think he was fighting Cleveland Williams. I don't remember. But he saw him in the Houston Astrodome, and he said that you couldn't see Ali's punches in person. All you could see was Cleveland Williams' hair going back, right, whenever he'd touch him.
Well, I met Ali in person. And that was early when he got banned. And then I saw Ali when he came back. In the ring, there was an aura of he brought the atmosphere. If you're looking to look for a personality that brings his own complete weather system to the ring, that would have been Muhammad Ali. You're behind already. I mean, except for Joe Frazier. And now Joe, he brought his own system too. So that I ran into Joe Frazier at the Taj Mahal in Atlantic City. It was like 4 or 5 years ago, and before he passed away, I see this really just handsome guy in a gray suit and a big black cowboy hat. And I'm walking by, and like we catch each other's eyes, and he's talking about four people, and I go, "Well, it's George Foreman. That was Joe Frazier. I got to go talk to Joe." So I walked over and I said, "Excuse me, it's great to see you." And he goes, "Hey, great to see you. I like your work." I said, "Well, I like yours." So I have a picture of him, of me and Joe. And so I got like a half hour. I didn't want to, but everybody kind of went because he wanted to talk about show business and I wanted to talk about boxing. Yeah. And so he wanted to sell me his gym. He says, "The kids aren't working hard enough in Philly. I need to sell my gym. You want to buy it? You want to get in?" I said, "Nah, I don't have the chops, you know." But, "Oh, no, you can do this." But, you know, I shook his hand, and his hand was like this, like a catcher's mitt. It just kind of disappeared in there. But, you know, but all boxers, when they shake their hands, it's like you barely feel it. It's like very, nobody grabs your hand. It's like very, because, you know, that's what they use their hands for.
Yeah, absolutely. It always seems to be that way. They're always more interested in what you're doing and you want to talk about. No, tell me about the fight. I mean, this is Smoking Joe, man. Smoking Joe Frazier. I need to know all the details of every fight that you've ever had in your life. Just really awesome stuff. But here's my last question for you, Chris, because I know obviously you're traveling out of the country later on, so I'm not going to keep you forever. But you have maintained a very successful career for decades. You've been a working actor, as you said, musician. You've been in so many big projects. Hell, you've even made me openly weep on a plane. How have you been able to stay successful when so many people might have a short stint and then you never hear from them again?
I do know. I'm fun to be with. You know, I take my work seriously, so I learn my stuff. I come prepared. I'm always looking for stuff. I'm always interested, and I'm always enthusiastic about it. But I, you know, and I've been lucky too. I tell my agents, let's do smart stuff. You know, let's do, and most of the time, except for Skates on Angels on Skates with Charlie's Angels when I was a kid, because I was a boogie skater in Venice. That was a good gig too. I worked with the Angels. I was a boogie skater. But I, you know, go be prepared, be a nice guy, show up on time. You're okay, you know. And if somebody bugs you, then you know, shine them. You know, that's okay. You know, just slip the punch.
Just slip the punch like Smoking Joe or Muhammad Ali might do. Chris Mulkey, mm-hmm. it's been a real great time to talk to you today. Make sure you go see The World Without You. Stream it wherever you can get it. It's one of those stories that needed to be told, and Chris and the gang was the right people to do it. Chris, I really appreciate your time.
I appreciate being here. I'll see you again. I'll tell you that other story.
All right. Yeah, I can't wait. Thank okay. you so much.
Ciao.
Oh, Brad, what have you done now?